Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 78 from Canto 4, Chapter 8. Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. Ādāraṁ mahad ādīnāṁ pradhāna purusheśvaraṁ brahma-dārya-dhārya-mānasya trayolokāścha-kampire Ādāraṁ mahad ādīnāṁ Pradhana Purusheshwaram Brahmadharanamanasya Trayolokascha Kampire Adharam Repose Mahat Adinam of the material sum total known as the Mahatattva. Pradhana, the chief. Purusha Ishwaram, master of all living entities. Brahma, the supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead. Dharana Manasya, having taken into the heart. Trayaha, the three planetary systems. Lokaha, all the planets. Chakampire, began to tremble. Translation, when Dhruva Maharaj thus captured the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the refuge of the total material creation, and who is the master of all living entities, the three worlds began to tremble. So we'll go back, and then we'll read this purport. Text 73. We heard the first month. What did Dhruva do in the first month? Kapita fruits and berries every third day. Tri Ra Trante, every third day, some nice, juicy kapita fruits. That was the first month. In the second month, Dhruva Maharaj ate only every 6 days, and he changed his diet. For his eatables, he took dry grass and leaves. Yummy. Every 6 days. Dry grass and leaves. Thus he continued his worship. In the third month, changed his menu, he drank water only every 9 days. That's the third month. Thus he remained completely entranced and worshiped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was adored by selected verses. In the fourth month, Dhruva Maharaj became a complete master of the breathing exercise, and thus he inhaled air only once every 12th day. In this way, he became completely fixed in his position and worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What do you do for a follow-up for that one? By the fifth month, Maharaj Dhruva, the son of the king, had controlled his breathing so perfectly that he was able to stand on only one leg, just as a column stands without motion, and concentrated his mind fully on the Parabrahman. Text 77. He completely controlled his senses and their objects, and in this way fixed his mind without diversion to anything else upon the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. The yogic principles of meditation are clearly explained here. One has to fix one's mind upon the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without diversion to any other objective. It is not that one can meditate or concentrate on an impersonal objective. To try to do this is simply a waste of time, for it is unnecessarily troublesome, as explained in Bhagavad Gita. End of purport. Then this verse. When Dhruva Maharaj thus captured the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the refuge of the total material creation, and who is the master of all living entities, the three worlds began to tremble. Purport by Śrīla Prabhupāda. In this verse, the particular word Brahma is very significant. Brahman refers to one who is not only the greatest, but has the potency to expand to an unlimited extent. How is it possible for Dhruva Maharaj to capture Brahman within his heart? His heart's small, and Brahman can expand to an unlimited extent, and how does that get captured in one's heart? This question has been very nicely answered by Jiva Goswami. He says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the origin of Brahman, for since he, that's Krishna, comprises everything material and spiritual, there cannot be anything greater than he. In Bhagavad Gita also, the Supreme Godhead says, I am the resting place of Brahman. Many persons, especially the Mayavadi philosophers, consider Brahman the biggest, all-expanding substance. But according to this verse and other Vedic literatures, such as Bhagavad Gita, the resting place of Brahman is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as within his heart, just as the resting place of the sunshine is the sun globe. Jiva Goswami, therefore, says that since the transcendental form of the Lord is the seed of all greatness, he is the Supreme Brahman. Since the Supreme Brahman was situated in the heart of Dhruva Maharaj, he became heavier than the heaviest, and therefore everything trembled in all the three worlds and in the spiritual world. Paragraph. The Mahatattva, so this is making reference to the Mahat-adi-nam, because the word for word Mahat-adi-nam is of the material sum total, known as the Mahatattva. So, reference to the verse. The Mahatattva, or sum total of the material creation, is to be understood to be the ultimate end of all universes, including the living entities therein. And logically, the next Brahman is the resort of the Mahatattva, which includes all material and spiritual entities. we'll come back. It's like there's some sequential logic to all of this. It is described in this connection that the Supreme Brahman, the Personality Godhead, is the master of both Pradhan and Purusha. Pradhan means subtle matter, such as ether. Purusha means the spiritual spark living entities who are entangled in the subtle material existence. These may also be described as para prakriti and apara prakriti, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna, being the controller of both the prakritis, is thus the master of Pradhan and Purusha. In the Vedic hymns also, the Supreme Brahman is described as Anta Pravishta Shasta. This indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is controlling everything and entering into everything. The Brahma Samhita 535 further confirms this. Antantarasta Paramanuchayantarastam. He has entered not only into the universes, but into even the atom. In Bhagavad Gita 10:42, Krishna also says, Vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam. That is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead controls everything by entering into everything. By associating constantly with the Supreme Personality in his heart, Dhruva Maharaja naturally became equal to the greatest, or Brahman, by his association, and thus became the heaviest. And the entire universe trembled. In conclusion, a person who always concentrates on the transcendental form of Krishna within his heart can very easily strike the whole world with wonder at his activities. Thus, this is the perfection of yoga performance as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 6:47. Yoginam api sarvesham. Of all yogis, the bhakti yogi who thinks of Krishna always within his heart and engages in his loving transcendental service is the topmost. Ordinary yogis can exhibit wonderful material activities known as ashtat siddhi, eight kinds of yogic perfection, but a pure devotee of the Lord can surpass these perfections by performing activities which can make the whole universe tremble. The Dhruva Maharaj, as we said earlier, a few days earlier, the Dhruva Maharaj story or narration in the Bhagavatam is really popular. And it's popular because of a number of reasons. One, here's this little boy who's, you know, got a thing going on. I want a kingdom. It's like a little spoiled kid. I want a kingdom. But, you know, it's not just a little spoiled kid. His mentality is like that, but his prowess is... So it's charming. That's one of the... But within the pastime, there are many very deep and profound understandings. Certainly thinking about this effect of the wonderful way that Srimad Bhagavatam is composed. It's a Purana. It's a history. And so the history illustrates principles. And you can... I was giving this example. Like a giwik. What's a giwik? It's a little ball of cotton that you tighten and tighten and put in ghee and tighten and tighten, and it's just strands of cotton and ghee. So before you make the ghee weak, you can do it the other way. Take the cotton ball and just pull it apart and pull it apart and pull it apart and pull it apart and pull it apart. And it's just a little strand of cotton. And then look at this strand and look at that strand. And then you put it together and you tighten it and tighten it and put it in ghee and you got a ghee wick. You can offer that to Krishna. So the glorification, the Srimad Bhagavatam has both these strands of truths, of absolute truth meaning that from which everything comes. The rest, repose, Prabhupada is using that word here, repose, the shelter, the emanating source of everything. And then everything is made up of this strand and that strand and so many strands, and put them all together, you got the ghee wick. But you can just look at this. So philosophically, there's the strand. And then the story is attractive. But it's illustrating a strand, a principle of the nature of the absolute truth and the way to approach the absolute truth. And what the experience is, what the realization is. So it's very deep and profound at the same time. It's very attractive. It's so attractive that you can tell the story again and again to a little child and they like. It's like Krishna's pastimes. Children can hear Krishna's pastimes hundreds of times. And I know children that they can't go to sleep without hearing their parents tell their favorite pastime, you know, each night. Then, you know, they may have a list of their top five or top ten, and they want it, but they really commonly have a favorite one. So, but what is it about hearing it again and again? This microphone stand is problematic. There's potency. There's all attractiveness, Krishna-ness, it was all attractive, within the Leela. And here's from, so, Prahlad is a little boy and Dhruva is a little boy. So there's some special attractiveness to hearing transcendence from a little boy. So here's Dhruva, little boy. So one of the principles we discussed and heard yesterday, which is complete shelter in the instructions of Narada as a principle. And he adhered to the principle. And therefore, perfection. So now we're going to hear something, two things, a little more on the technical side, but the nature of, well, three things. The nature of controlling the mind and senses, what's that like? Particularly for a Vaishnava, devotee of the Lord, but also looking at the attempts to do the same from one who's not. And then, that's a philosophical thing, but it's couched or it's set within the story. Then another is the position of the absolute truth, because satyam param dhimahi, the Bhagavatam is elucidating the highest truth. Janma dhyasya yataha, that from which everything comes. So how do we unpack that? How do we take Krishna is the absolute truth and understand it fully? So it's here. The distinction between Brahman, Paramat and Bhagavan realization is within the Leela. And then, aside from Brahman, Paramat and Bhagavan, then What's the relationship between all other things, Mahatattva, the sum total of all material energy and the living entities, all of the living entities, what's the relation of Prakriti to the Supreme? And we're hearing there, on the one hand they're within him, and the other hand they're expanded everywhere, and at the same time he has his own separate existence. Like in chapter 9 Bhagavad Gita. So here we go. The verse that we chanted that's on the board here follows this other one that has the purport, short purport, about in all respects, sarvata, his mind was fully concentrated upon the form of the Supreme Lord within his heart. And the description, or the adjective that's describing the object, Krishna, is Krishna is the resting place of the senses and the objects of the senses, because he's the resting place of everything. So rather than there's the negative withdrawing. This is part of the Ashtanga Yoga system. He's following it. That's pratyahara, withdrawing the subtle senses from the subtle objects of the senses, because there's gross senses and there's subtle senses. Gross senses means like here's a hand or here's an eye. So that sight and hearing and smelling and feeling, touch, taste, there's five senses. But supposing one of those senses breaks, then you can conceptually, this is what modern medicine tries to do, or science, take another part and put another part in. Something like when your car breaks down and maybe the alternator or generator is burned out or something. You take the generator out or the alternator out and you put another one in. And zoom, zoom, zoom. The machine works. That's like an automobile mechanic. And then there's a body mechanic. A body mechanic is one who recognizes there's the gross sense, but there's also the subtle sense. So in the yoga system, pratyahara, one withdraws the subtle sense. It's like the Bhishma Dev description that we'll be hearing about this evening, where at a certain point, the sun starts moving in the northerly direction, and then he withdraws his senses. And it doesn't mean like his arms went inside his body, or his eyes just jumped inside the eye sockets or something like that. It means the subtle senses were withdrawn from the subtle objects, because there's gross objects and there's subtle objects. Krishna is the repose of both. But like there's, here's a nice example that's given sometimes. Supposing somebody has gangrene or some kind of like very severe infection, and they have to have their arm amputated. So they have the experience, some have the experience, that even after the limb is gone, they feel pain and irritation, although the limb is gone. So where is that? It's within the mind. And then there's the subtle sense. The subtle sense, there's memory within the mind, and the memory is being triggered by the event. It's the impression that's left from when there was gangrene or whatever it was in the arm, although the arm is gone. They feel pain. They feel pain. So it's not happening down here. It's happening inside. This sense of pain. And you take it the other way. Happiness. It's Maya. It's illusion. It appears to be substantial, but it's not. And the yoga system is to withdraw from the insubstantial and repose the faculty of cognizance that's from the soul upon the Supreme Soul. So what Dhruva has been doing is he's practicing controlling the external senses, but that's possible by withdrawing the internal senses, and that's possible to be steady in that position when the attention, instead of the external senses or the subtle senses, goes to the Supreme. That's what he, you know, so there's the external description of what he's doing, and then there's the internal description of what he's doing. He's fixing his mind completely on the Supreme. And who is that Supreme? The adjective is, he who is the ashaya, the resting place of bhuta, the senses, and, indriya, the senses, and the objects of the senses. Bhuta, indriya, ashaya. The yoga system works when one fixes one's mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then it's natural that everything becomes consolidated. The senses, the subtle sense objects, because one's concentrating on the root source of them all, the absolute truth. So all of that is then fulfilled or satisfied. That's the principle of meditation. I think because of lack of time, I'm not going to go into something that's a nice subject. I'm thinking to speak about it midday with the college students about the distinction between personal and impersonal meditation, or mind control, controlling the mind by abnegation, by just saying no, and being, you know, a stoic, or being a tapasvi, or denying the senses, parching the senses by denial, just like burning them out, so all that's left is nothing. And finding happiness in nothingness. That's Buddhism. What's the ultimate objective? Nothingness. What's the method? Deny the senses. Give them a bad name. They're false. They don't exist. And impersonalism does the same. And the destination of those is the place where you're neither in the spiritual nor the material realm. It's called the viraja. That's the destination of a shunyavad person. You're neither here nor there. And that's the goal, to enter into a condition of nothingness. Because the somethingness over here is, well, it's illusion. And it's true, it's illusion. So where does this illusion come from? It doesn't exist. And what is that which it comes from? It doesn't exist either. So enter into the reality of nothingness. That's the goal. And Mayavad philosophy is essentially the same thing. Then there's what's on the other side of the river Viraja is the Brahmajyoti. And that's where the next verse comes in, where what does Brahman mean? Because that's in the verse. Adharam Mahad Adinam Pradhana Purusheshwaram Brahma. That's what he was fixed upon. So that the unpacking of this, here's another strand of a truth that's being presented within the story. There's a strand of cotton that says, the verse is saying, his concentration was upon Brahman, and again the modifiers. By Brahman, what do you mean? Well, Brahman is the Adinam, the sum total of everything. That's everything in the language of Bhagavad Gita is both matter and spirit. The repose, the shelter, the sum total of everything, matter and spirit. That's what Brahman is. And so, a dictionary definition of Brahman, now I'm going through Jiva Goswami's explanation, just slowly. A dictionary definition of Brahman is the greatest. And the way that an impersonalist looks at the greatest is the all-expansive, everywhere existing, whether there's matter or no matter, Brahman, all-pervasive Brahman. That's the greatest. And that which is of this temporary realm, whether you want to call it illusion that it doesn't exist, or it's whatever it is, whatever different ideas of what this place is, it comes from that place. And so Brahman is the supreme. And that's their idea, is that's what the goal of meditation is to meditate on Brahman, the impersonal Brahman. So the previous purport, Prabhupada says, according to Bhagavad Gita, it's very troublesome. Or, be more explicit, impossible. Because to fix the mind on that which has no quality, that which has no form, that which has no personality, it's, you know, not this, not this, not this, fix your mind on that. How to even conceive of it, what to speak of, fix your mind on it. Impossible. Or very problematic, very troublesome. But moreover, according to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text 27, Krishna is the basis of that. Brahmanohi pratishtaham. So in the beginning of the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about another kind of Brahman. There's three kinds. The term Brahman has three different applications, at least. One of them is Mahad Brahman. And what's Mahad Brahman mean? It's the sum total of matter. Mahad Brahman means the sum total of matter. And then there's another meaning of Brahman, and that's the living entity is Brahman, spirit. Because matter comes from spirit. How does matter come from spirit? Just listening to a room conversation with Srila Prabhupada and Swarup Damodar Maharaj that was in Bhubaneswar, and he was describing, I'll do it quickly, but he was collaborating with a scientist that was doing an experiment as follows. He took grains of rice, the scientist, put the grains of rice in water, a special kind of water, a water that had been deionized, so there was no calcium ions and magnesium ions, it was deionized water. They had measured the quantum of calcium and magnesium, etc., in the grain of rice before it went in the water and then after it went in the water, and voila! There's more magnesium, more calcium, more ions in the rice from being in the water that doesn't have any. So, where'd it come from? And the scientist that was working on this was a man from Sweden, said it's beyond the range of our modern science. It's like, you know, they like to talk like that anyways, but where's the matter come from? And Prabhupada's, you know, without doing it in the laboratory, take a lemon tree. Measure how much citric acid there is in the earth, and then plant a lemon tree and watch the lemon trees produce so much citric acid year after year after year after year, and, you know, big quantities of citric acid. Where's the citric acid coming from? Is it coming from the earth? Is it coming from the water? Can it be that it's coming from the tree? Is spirit producing matter? So Srila Dhammadhar Maharaj was describing to Srila Prabhupada another similar type of experiment that he was going to collaborate with another scientist on and establish in the language that scientists can go, yeah, that's bona fide. It stands the inspection of the puffy wuffies. It matter comes from spirit. Not the other way around. So do an experiment that shows that spirit comes from matter. And the answer to that is that we cannot say. Without any experimental evidence, they say it's a fact. So you can make comments about what that kind of science is. Rubbish is one comment. Or it's non-scientific, another. So, Krishna, the absolute truth, is the repose or the basis of everything. And similarly, the impersonalists have this idea. Let's say the Brahmavadis have this idea, because they're different readings. So the impersonalists just say matter is false. It doesn't exist. As the Buddhists say, the Mayavadis say, their language is different, but that's what they're saying. Jagat mithya, it's false. It doesn't exist. That's like makes the whole thing really easy. It just doesn't exist. But if it doesn't exist, then why am I an illusion? Well, because you're covered by Maya. Okay, well that means Maya is greater than Brahman. No, we can't have Maya is greater than Brahman. We can't even have two things, it just doesn't exist. It's not logical. It's not satisfying. Besides, it's not right. So what is it? It's one of the Bhagavatam version or Vyasadeva's teaching is, it's one of the unlimited energies of the source of everything. And so what Dhruva was doing was fixing his consciousness upon the source of everything. Well, what's that? It's the repose of everything. It's Mahat Adinam. It's the Mahatattva. Then what's that? Pradhana Purusha Ishvaram. So there's matter and spirit. Pradhana. Pradhana means the unmanifested state of the sum total of material energy. And Purusha in this case means the living entity. So this is the third meaning of Brahman. Remember I said there's two? Mahat Brahman, total material energy. 14th chapter, you'll find it. Look, it's there in the beginning verses of the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Brahman has another meaning, that's the living entity. And then there's another meaning. That's the meaning that applies here, because the living entity isn't the repose of everything, matter, and spirit. That's not what the living entity is. So it's Parabrahman. That's what Dhruva had his consciousness fixed upon, to the exclusion of anything else. The anything else was still going on, but his attention wasn't distracted by that anything else. So what's material life? It's the reverse. Our attention isn't on the source of everything. Our attention is on one little part of everything, and it's called desire. And you know the mood is, I want to enjoy. And then there's the object that's arranged by the control of the material energy, so you can contemplate an object, just like Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. By contemplating the object of the senses, one develops an attachment for them. And then dominoes, boom, 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 boom. And then you have material life. And material life covers the absolute truth. It's not that the absolute truth doesn't exist. It says our consciousness of the absolute truth becomes covered. Therefore, to rewind the whole system, one has to control the mind. Oh, controlling the mind. Impossible. Krishna says, or Arjuna says in Bhagavad Gita, more difficult to control the mind than controlling the raging wind. Oh, my dear Krishna. And Krishna's reply is, yes, you're right. But it's possible by constant practice and detachment. So, just like last night, in discussion, the teachings of Bhishma Dev, what is it? One of the essential duties of a teacher or a parent or anyone that's taking responsibility for the lives of others, you can start with your own life, is detachment. It's like, that looks mean, like a bully. I gotta be in a ring with a bully. Detachment. But it's not. Detachment, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says detachment means attachment to Krishna. And if the attachment to Krishna means to see things, this is the Vaishnava perspective on detachment, to see things, like all things, but especially important is those things that we think are nice objects to enjoy, see all things in relation to Krishna. It's Krishna's. And since it's Krishna's, it's meant to be used in Krishna's service. And if there isn't some facility for using this in Krishna's service, detached. Because I'm attached to Krishna. That leads to detachment. That's our Vaishnava principle, the Rupa Goswami teaching principle of Yukta Vairagya. Vairagya, detachment through utilizing things in Krishna's service. And that's the sense control. That's being described by Dhruva, who approached it in Satya Yuga in one way. We don't have the capacity, we're not Satya Yuga people. We're Kali Yuga people, so we have another principle. But it's not just using things and calling it, you know, giving it a nice perfume and making it smell nice instead of stinky and calling it devotional service. It has to be, the consciousness has to be for the pleasure of Krishna. Otherwise it's not bhakti. For the pleasure of Krishna. And otherwise, no. If it's not for the pleasure of Krishna. You know, this goes back to the topic during my last visit and something I touched on Wednesday, and not doing time-wasting activity in the name of, you know, I'm a nice devotee, I'm just like, no, it's innocent. Doing some innocent time-wasting thing. Kunjara Sotra. Just, I took a nice bath and now I'm throwing dust on myself. because, you know, it's part of what elephants do after taking a bath. We must remove ourselves, train ourselves, submit ourselves to simply using our senses for the service of Krishna and not otherwise. And practice, just as Krishna says to Arjuna, constant practice and detachment. Practice bringing the mind and senses to Krishna's service. And become attached to Krishna in doing so. Not like, oh, this is a good one. I get some satisfaction, Krishna gets some satisfaction. It's great. And I'm still like on the platform of what's in it for me consciousness or sense gratification consciousness. In the beginning, that may very well be there. Bhaktisiddhanta's term is dovetail. I got my desire. Krishna's got his desire. Hey, there's a match up here. Like a Venn diagram. There's this circle and there's that circle. And there's this little overlap. We'll call that devotional service because really the program is it's my desire. It just happens to match something that Krishna likes to. So the real program is my desire. And that's a starting point. Starting point. But like, let's say vegetarianism, because it's healthy and it makes sense in terms of nonviolence and ecologically and economically and so many good, nice reasons, wholesome reasons. But the real thing is, we just want to do what's pleasing Krishna. That's like the higher, the real reason. And there may be some overlapping reasons. But so coming to make wet wood dry wood before you try to ignite it, we may do some of the overlapping thing. But we have to transition to, it's just for Krishna. And that's it. That's it. That's how I live my life. My life is for Krishna. Because all things are Krishna's. And they're meant for Krishna's service. And therefore, that's the restraint. That's the detachment. I just don't do things if it's not in Krishna's service. The time-wasting things. You know, there's so many time-wasting things. Technology has filled the universe with time-wasting things. You know, gadgets and technology and internet and news media and novels and fiction and radio and music and yada, yada, yada. Just anything to take your attention away from Krishna. There's a cornucopia of stuff. And then somebody sees, oh, there's a new one. And then, you know, there's a couple of kids that are doing the new one, so I want to do the new one. Let's check it out. Mommy, I want to check it out. Or just don't even tell mommy, just go check it out. Or the adults, you know, same thing. It's Kali Yuga. The protection from that onslaught of Kali Yuga is the principle that's being shown here by Dhruva, only the form of it doesn't have to be the Satyuga form, it's the Lord Chaitanya's very merciful form. We engage ourselves in hearing and chanting. And then, but there's that sense control principle must be there. And the valve that controls the senses is submission unto Krishna. Submission under the guidance of, just as in the Dhruva story, of the guidance of Narada or the qualified spiritual master. That's my protection. And I feel safe. I feel happy. My everything is he's not feeling deprived. Although, look at from the outside and my goodness, he's deprived. But he's not feeling deprived. He's feeling ecstasy. And to the extent, so now continuing, on meditating on Brahman, this word in the verse, dharana manasya. It's taken from the same root as in the previous verse, dhyana dharana samadhi. The last stages of the Eightfold Yoga System, dhyana, dharana, samadhi. this thing. You know, there are different. Pratyahara is something he's already done. So before the pratyahara is yama, niyama. What was that? Your cell phone?
Yeah, it's off.
It talks anyways, huh? Sounds like some people I know. Okay. Yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, that's the first four. Commonly, yoga classes, they'll teach asana, may teach pranayama, rarely do they teach yama, niyama, and then pratyahara comes next, which is withdrawing the subtle senses from the subtle objects. It's consolidation. Again, it's what Bhishma Dev did. He was extending his senses to serve the Pandavas and serve everyone, but particularly in this final stage, he's serving Yudhisthira and the Pandavas so they can rule properly. Then he did this pratyahara thing. We'll hear it. He just withdrew his senses from the subtle sense objects. Then comes dharana, dhyana, samadhi. Dharana is in the previous verse. Dhyana is here. Dharana is here. Dharana, dhyana, samadhi. Just like the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. What is it in Sanskrit? Dhyana yoga. Dhyana, dharana, samadhi. So, fixing the mind is after withdrawing the mind from and the senses from subtle objects, fixing the mind. Then it is this previous verse is exclusively, that's what the verse says, without diversion to anything else. The Sanskrit is na adrikshit kinchana aparam. He did not see anything else. Not that he became blind. His consciousness didn't go anywhere else. It didn't go to the desires, you know, the itching and the scratching and the contemplating of the objects. It was withdrawn. And then instead reposed completely on the Absolute Truth and nothing else. So one can be in an atmosphere where the material energy is moving. It, you know, the features of duality are there, sometimes hot and cold, sometimes honor, dishonor, sometimes this and that, and withdrawn completely, neutral, or unaffected by it. Like the lotus that's growing above the water. There can be a storm. The water is, you know, turbulent. The lotus remains untouched. Like that, Dhruva had accomplished it. Now, further stage of concentration, before the stage of samadhi, is that's the dharana stage. The word is dharanaya, dharaya manasya. Manasya. He had captured, the translation is, he had captured the Supreme Lord. Now, how can you capture the Supreme Lord? He's fully independent. Or, if you think of Brahman as the all-pervasive expansiveness of the Supreme that's everywhere, how do you capture that in the heart? And the answer is, he captured the seed, or the source of Brahman, which is the source of things material. He is the source of things material and the living entities and Brahman. He captured the personality of Godhead. That's the understanding. And captured, he just fixed his mind exclusively upon. It means in devotion, because how can you fix your mind exclusively on something without love? The answer is you can't. Because your mind is going to go somewhere else. It's going to go to that which you're attracted to enjoying. That's material desire. So what's the alternative to that? There's only one alternative. there's no other desire but the Supreme. Desire is there because that's concomitant with the soul. And try to anesthetize desire by becoming one with nothingness. It's totally artificial. One devotee was describing like this. Voluntarily sitting in a, putting yourself in a straitjacket with your mouth gagged and your eyes blindfolded in a padded cell. And feeling blissful. And just doing that indefinitely, like eternally. It's ridiculous. Besides, it's punishment. There's no happiness. There's no positive. There's the restriction of the senses, but not the mind, the sixth sense. And at some point, one's going to want to bust out of that situation and go back into the field. So unless there's positive happiness, the positive happiness of the soul, loving the Supreme Soul in a relationship, where the senses, the spiritual senses are engaged in the service of the master of the senses. It's not a sustainable situation. It's not real. It's artificial completely. So that's not good medicine. It doesn't bring one to the healthy state. It brings one to another artificial state. And go in the other direction, just like ramp up the sense gratification. Try it in different ways and, you know, get more of it and try to mix it in different ways so it comes out nice. Increasing the fever for the patient who has fever doesn't work. Making the temperature zero, that doesn't work. Make it whatever the 98.6 temperature. What's the normal condition of the soul to be in that relationship with the Supreme? The method is a Satyuga method that Dhruva is applying, but the principle is the same principle. Fixing our mind upon the personality of Godhead. So, who is that? The verse is describing. And seeing in that way, being concentrated upon the seed of all existence. I'll read again what Prabhupada writes. Since the transcendental form of the Lord is the seed of greatness, Brahman, he is the Supreme Brahman. Then, this Mahatattva, he is the basis of Mahatattva. The Mahatattva, or sum total of material creation, is to be understood to be the ultimate end of all universes, including the living entities therein. So matter and spirit and the forms of the bodies of all living entities. Krishna is the repose of that. That's what the Mahatattva is, and Krishna is the repose of that. Brahman is the resort of the Mahatattva, which includes all material and spiritual entities. He had this, you know, the motivation for him was a material one. He wanted a big kingdom. And he was told by his mother, only Lord Vishnu, if he is pleased to give you whatever it is that you want, he can do it. Very good. How do I find Lord Vishnu? I don't know. I'm just a woman living in the palace. But I've heard that sages, they go to the forest and somehow they find Vishnu. Very well. I'm going to the forest. And he didn't find Vishnu. He found trees and birds and animals and, you know, jungle life. They didn't find Vishnu. Then Narada came, and Narada told him how to find Vishnu. So he's focused on Vishnu. What does a little boy know what Vishnu is? But he followed the instructions of Narada, and what Vishnu is became disclosed to him. He's got his mind completely concentrated. I mean, otherwise, how could he do these extreme things? He was fully satisfied. He wasn't feeling confined or dissatisfied or anything other than completely full. So then Prabhupada goes, this last paragraph, and we'll end, he goes into this within everything. Everything comes from him and he enters into everything. We know that. He's the source and he enters within everything. It's ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And he's referring to several other places where it says, from the Vedas, Anta, Pravishta. Pravishta means enter. Anta, Pravishta, Shasta. This indicates that Supreme Personality Godhead is controlling everything and enters into everything. Brahma-samhita, Adantarasta, Paramanuchayantarastam. He's entered not only into the universes, but to every atom. And besides the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, here's the tenth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Tenth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is the opulences of the Absolute. So how are these opulences opulent? He's the basis of those opulences. These are vibhutis. They're just reflections of his opulences because he's within that energy. He's the opulent. That's different. That's Bhagavan, spiritual opulences. And then there's the reflection of those spiritual opulences within matter, and that's vibhutis. Vishtabhyaham idam krishnam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead controls everything by entering into everything. By associating constantly with the Supreme Personality in his heart, Dhruva naturally became equal to the greatest Brahman by his association and thus became the heaviest, and the entire universe trembled. That's what's in the last line of this verse. Trayo, the three planetary systems, Trayo lokas chakampire, began to tremble. The Dhruva became as qualified as the Supreme Personality of Godhead because of his fixing his consciousness upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead to such a degree as he was on one foot and the other leg like this, crossed. His toe was making a big depression in the earth, like the weight of the universe upon the earth. And the universe was trembling. So Prabhupada's final point is, someone may be interested or attracted by the exhibition of mystic cities, which is partial. And that's also still material. But a devotee on the caliber of Dhruva Maharaj, so it's not like the test of the pure devotee is when can they stand on one foot for some period of time. There was one man who used to come to our Tuwako temple. He moved, but he would take darshan of the deity standing on one foot, like, you know, Dhruva. He was pretty good. He had good balance. But that's not, you know, it's imitation and it's artificial. It's not our process. Doesn't help our concentration upon the Personality of God and stand on one foot before the deity. The form is not the essence. The essence is the essence. And our way of approaching the essence makes us gradually qualified. And that qualification is progressively, as our Krishna conscious life evolves, progressively, the measure is of progress, how much consciousness is upon Krishna. And when your consciousness becomes more and more absorbed in Krishna, all the things that Krishna speaks of in Bhagavad Gita is how you see things. It's not some imposition from something over outside, and it gets superimposed over here, and then you get, you know, programmed or brainwashed to just like blindly imitate something. But rather, the disclosure that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita becomes what you see. and what you feel and what you experience and reality, like reality. That the access into that reality is bringing the mind to Krishna. So our practice is very simple. We chant Hare Krishna. We see the deity form of Krishna. We hear the topics of Krishna. We serve the devotees of Krishna. These four activities just mentioned are what's given to us to help our consciousness become absorbed in Krishna. And as much as we try in a very personal way to bring our consciousness to Krishna, the realization of all the teachings is within our, it's what we experience. And the illusion falls away. The attraction to become an enjoyer of matter as if it's independent and as if there's some real happiness there and fruitive activities and the whole display of Maya becomes pale. And the curtain is drawn and one can see Krishna within the everyday experiences of life. And feel the presence of Krishna within your heart and feel the guidance of Krishna through the scripture, through the ways that Krishna gives guidance, through the super soul within the heart, through the devotees of the Lord, through the teachings of the spiritual master, one feels Krishna's presence. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Yes.
There are a number of Vedic scholars who take the stance that this whole imposition of Maya was the big weak link in Sankaracharya's school of thought. What did Prabhupada's view on that imposition of Maya?
Well, I have already, as I said, it's irrational. It's illogical. And it's unacceptable. That's so Prabhupada would speak like that. You can read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Adi Lila chapter 7, where it's detailed, where Lord Chaitanya is having his discussion with Prakashananda Saraswati, and in lengthy purports Prabhupada says what I just said. It's very similar. It's the weak link. Besides it's rubbish, the entry point into disclosing the rubbishness of the teaching is how does with any ism, any theism, religious teaching, how does one explain material creation, the illusory manifestation of the temporary creation to the Supreme? So if taking the position that it's false is unsupportable. So yes, it's a weak link because it's rubbish. And it can't, so word juggling doesn't make it be supportable. It's not that the material world is false. It's temporary. And it appears to be real. That's a aspect of the material energy. It appears to be muyanti atsurayaha, in the language of the introductory verses of Bhagavatam. It deludes even the great demigods. It has such a potency. But the spiritual reality is nirasta kuhakam. It's free from that. There's the distinction. Material and spiritual reality. And there's one source of both. So that's not what their teaching is, and therefore, yes, it's the weak link. Wait a minute. It's not false. It's just word juggling. Then another is, Prabhupada's take on it is, nor do they live by it. They say it is false, and then what do? they're actively involved in that which is, they say, is false. One time, it's very quickly, one time Prabhupada said, okay, everything is one, then give me all your money. Or another time, everything is one, he grabbed the person by his shirt and said, then why are you not wearing cotton ball? Because the man was being obstinate. So he, if everything is one, then this is Jayadvaitamara's story. To one girl, uptown Swami girl that was coming to Prabhupada's classes in the Lower East Side. She said, at the end of a class, you know, listening blissfully, at the end of the class, said, Swamiji, isn't it true that in the final analysis, everything is one? And Prabhupada became fire. Everything is one. If everything is one, then why don't you put your food here? Prabhupada could be confrontational at times to dismiss the idea that there isn't, this is false and everything is one. Ultimately, everything is oneness in Brahman. There's distinctions. There's distinctions. Yes. So the first part of your question I couldn't hear so clearly. How can I engage in hearing in such a way that
I don't put myself in burden or judgment.
Don't put yourself in burden or judgment.
That's for me, like understanding sense gratification and like detachment is far, you know, it's difficult to understand what is sense gratification and what is detachment, because what you mentioned about Vaishnava's approach, it's, for me, it's very far beyond.
No. It's not far beyond. Here's the starting point. Read Krishna book. Just read Krishna book. And read Lilamrita. That's the beginning point. And because with hearing about the all-attractive, one becomes attracted because Krishna is all-attractive. And by the mind, just thinking of these nice pastimes of Krishna, you don't have to be, you know, a big renunciate or a big scholar. Just be attracted to Krishna's wonderful pastimes. And by that attraction comes detachment. By attachment comes detachment. So what happens is, things, the attractiveness of things, it pales. Whatever things might be for someone. Someone, whatever. It might be television, or it might be fashion, or it might be something. Whatever that something is. It pales. The grip of Maya fades. Just by attraction to Krishna. Or the wonderful quality that Prabhupada exhibited over and over and over and over in so many nice ways through his quality as a devotee. It's such a wonderful literature, Lilamrita. And one starts to appreciate that the devotion, the determination, the quality. And that the result is, by that attachment, the other starts to pale. Not like a struggle. Not that kind of detachment. It just fades. That's how it's done. That's our Vaishnava principle. And it's exactly how Prabhupada started the Hare Krishna movement. He didn't right away start with don't do this and don't do that and the other thing. He didn't do that. What did he do? Kirtan. You like kirtan? Everybody likes kirtan, of course. Join the kirtan. And then, hear something about Krishna. And take a prasadam. That's how Prabhupada started. He didn't say, don't do this, don't do that. Detachment. Become, try to understand who is Krishna. How wonderful is Krishna? Maybe you like fine art. Go see some fine art. Go to the country and see the beauty of nature. And it fills you with a sense of awe. And think of who is behind this nature. An artist may paint a landscape, but the landscape doesn't have fragrances. It doesn't change with the seasons. It doesn't have the fragrances of the flowers on the hillside. And behind the landscape painting is an artist. So what to speak of the artist that's behind the mountains, the trees, the beauty of nature. And then there's some fierceness of nature. Somebody took me to some place where there's this waterfalls that's coming down from the mountains from a glacier. And we went on this mountain trail. You can hear the roar of the stream going down because there was a glen, a deep cut from the years and years and who knows how long of the stream going downhill. And then at the top is just cascading down from heaven is this waterfall. But to get there, there were like a zillion and a half mosquitoes. they were big and they were hungry. So, you know, there can be some, you know, obstacles even in appreciating the beauty of nature. That's part of the beauty of nature. So, behind something very wonderful is God. And then there's detachment because of an attachment. Someone has a very beautiful singing voice. Where'd that gift come from? You know, if you think behind, especially from hearing directly from scripture about Krishna, then you can see those, you know, there's the presence of Krishna in things of this world. You can feel it. You can appreciate it. That's all. And with that comes detachment. As opposed to, oh, I want to go there and hear the nice singer because it's pleasing to my ear. That's different than devotion, appreciating Krishna. That's the spirit of detachment, is attachment to Krishna. So that's how to do. It's natural. You can do. You do. I'm sure you do. That's all. Now, someone that's on that path may hear about some things that may help one proceed toward Krishna, making the wet wood dry wood. Because that's an example given in the Bhagavatam. So, in addition to just hearing about Krishna and joining the kirtan, they may try to do something additional to make the wet wood dry wood. And for someone, that's nice. For someone else, I just want to hear a Krishna book and go to the kirtan. Fine. That's so, that your question was without being judgmental. Fine. Don't be judgmental upon yourself. I don't have the same attraction as somebody else that has the attraction. It's for them, it's fine. They like I was visiting one temple. I won't mention the name of the place, but it's a brahmachari. He was doing some austerities for Chaturmasya. He didn't tell anybody, but you know he lost 23 pounds, and everyone figured it out. You're doing some austerity. and they became worried about him. But he's a brahmachari. So the president brought the brahmachari and said, tell him he's doing the wrong thing. I did tell him he's doing the wrong thing. He said, you like austerity, you're brahmachari. Brahmacharis like austerities. So I'm not going to tell you don't like that which you like, but don't let it interfere with your service. Don't let your service go down because you're doing so much austerity. You don't have the strength, or you lose your health, and everything breaks, and now you're in a hospital, dehydrated or whatever it is. That's not devotional service. But somebody else that's not a brahmachari, that's not their cup of tea. That's like they like, let me do the Dhammadharashtakam prayers, and that's their austerity, their detachment. Worshipping Lord Dhammadhar and offering the prayers in a very feeling way. So something is good for someone, something else is good for another someone. The principle is bringing the senses and the mind to the service of Krishna and contemplating Krishna. So you do that which suits you, and don't judge yourself if what suits someone else. Don't be intimidated by someone else is doing something in a different way. You have your nature, each of us, and it's fine. Yeah. When you make a very strong yes within, it's very easy to be contentedly saying no to something else. I'm happy doing this. And the real standard of happiness mentioned already is bringing the mind and bringing the senses to Krishna. And it's fine. There's one devotee here in St. Louis, I don't know if he's still here, but a Prabhupada disciple that, at least I met him several times here in the temple, chants 64 rounds a day. He's been doing it for this was some years ago, 8-10 years. So I was asking, what's it like? And he was, he was very happy to share with me what it was like. And he's completely happy. Now, not everybody could do that and feel completely happy. They feel restless, to say the least. He's completely happy. So that, that's nice. But it's not like I have to judge myself. I'm not doing that. I'm doing something else that's admittedly he couldn't do. And he wouldn't want to do. And it's not his nature. And so it's fine. This one has his nature, and so forth. We all have our nature. That's nice. And then just put your hand down. I see you. What do you think? And so, by yes, I'm okay. And it's good. You check with scripture, guru and sadhu. Is this okay? Then I'm under, because it's something from our Bhishma Dev teaching, under the authority of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. Okay, then, if the indication is, you're moving from the middle of the road, you're not off the road in the ditch yet, but it might be good to move a little bit more to the middle of the road. Okay. Then one is submissive to the guidance of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. Fine. And you get there. Same place. Just apply the principle under proper guidance. And then another is, do that, this is the bhakti principle, do that for the pleasure of Krishna. And at least cultivate for the pleasure of Krishna. Let me make something nice in the kitchen for the pleasure of Krishna. and then I'll offer it to Krishna. Rather than the tongue, because that's something that was in yesterday's class. And cultivate like that. And that's nice. So that's detachment. It's fun. Where is this going? Where is this?
Just sharing that it's a glorious process, and as we imbibe it, Krishna and Guru help. And this is why we were able to emerge.
Thank you. Anyone else? Oh. How can you even take a time out and drink some water, you mean?
Like a stable level. I mean, I was just wondering how he'd be able to do that also.
I don't know. I wasn't there. He probably stood up and went and got some grass.
And he was inhaling like only one time in one day or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't either. It's part of the pranayama process, and when one becomes, super accomplished, then life air is suspended. I mean, I don't know the technology of it, but I know the statement of principle. Life air is suspended. It's not like it stops, but it's suspended. It's something like consciousness in the active state may be suspended. Certainly we do that when we rest, and even more so under an anesthetized state, but consciousness is still there. So the active principle of the soul sustaining life can be put into a neutral state, including life air. So we can't do that because it's a mystical process. If we just try to hold our breath, we'll pass out. You know, you'll get too much carbon dioxide and not enough oxygen and you'll pass out. So it's not that kind of, holding your breath. It's another kind of mystical process of suspending the life airs. I don't know how to do it. I don't know the technology of it. I just can describe the principle of it. And if that's the case, why does one even have to breathe every 12 days? And how did he keep track of Okay, it's 12 days. You know, the rising and the setting of the sun, maybe, and then he's got to count to 12. So something, if that's... So those technical things, I don't know. There's no description of it, and I don't know.
And also, he's only 5 years old.
So what?
Small boy.
So what? His consciousness wasn't small boy consciousness. His body was small boy body, but his consciousness wasn't. So one might wonder, well, gee, who was Dhruva in his previous life? Who is this soul that has this capacity? I don't know the answer to that one either, because maybe it's described somewhere in the scriptures, but I'm not aware of it. But so a very unique soul in a small body, like Prahlad. How did he do what he did? He was empowered. The empowerment came from the Supreme seeing the quality of devotion of Prahlad and Dhruva. And similarly, to whatever degree we're capable of, you know, back to your question about detachment, to whatever degree we have some capacity to do anything, become attached or become detached, it's from Krishna. So we look to Krishna and Krishna's kindness. And to whatever degree, this, it's coming from Krishna. And we just say thank you to Krishna for that. We heard it explicitly. Our position is not to imitate or to compare ourselves specifically. We don't judge ourselves by comparing ourselves to Dhruva. We recognize, whew, I'm insignificant. And whatever little something that I do is insignificant and compared. But the principle is powerful. And according to the capacity given to me by one who gives the capacity to anybody, let me do that for Krishna. That's all. So how he did what he did, Krishna gave him the ability to do what he did. All right? Do you want to Jivana? We're almost at 9:30 here.
Just a question. In the book, Prabhupada says that even the spiritual world trembles. Can you explain that?
No. Yamaraj?
Yes, Yamaraj. I recently read that one big scientist said that he conceded that everything was created by God. So I was wondering if you heard about that.
No. That, you know, there's maybe one or two in this column and 5,000 in that column. The scientists that say, rubbish. We don't need God and everything, you know, they got their own program. But, you know, Einstein and others, some brilliant persons, spoke about God. Except in the necessity. With clarity, there must be. Anyway, so there's theists and there's atheists. That's nothing new. Suras and the asuras since time immemorial. It's like the asuras really like mechanistic science, big time. Okay, we'll end there. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Jaya.